Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse here in Starkville or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. Be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in Vito.
Oof.
No, like the political thing.
Okay.
V-E-T-O.
Okay, I was about to say.
Yeah. It's a joke.
It's a joke.
No, that's not
what they pay to your wife for me.
They're not doing that at all. Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy. As soon as I said it, it's like, no. Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's only a click away at strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. My phone. Anyway. Mississippi Beef Council wants to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. If you're cooking out this weekend, nothing beats the sizzle of beef on the grill. If you're looking for great weeknight dinner ideas, beef is easy to cook, delicious, and inexpensive. We got great recipes at msbeef.org. If you don't want to do any of that kind of cooking, man, just hit up one of our great steakhouses across the state of Mississippi. We've got one in almost every community, and they're special to each city, and they're special to you if you go eat a great meal there. Beef, it's what's for dinner, thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com is the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you're looking for. I know that you're looking for it. You need new gear. You need to get some great gear with the interlocking MSU, the M over S, the state script. It's all right there at College Corner. Two locations to serve you in the Jackson area, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowwood by the Half Shell, or you can shop online, collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler, Starkville's flagship restaurant for lunch, dinner, or Sunday brunch. The best meal in town is always going to be at Restaurant Tyler. I love going to eat at Restaurant Tyler. I need to go eat there this week. I haven't done it yet. I'll probably try to make that happen before the end of the week because I like to eat the food there, and the food there is awesome. And every time I go there, I have a good time and a good meal. The people treat you right. I mean, what more can you ask for? And like I said, I always find it's so cool to me that place at lunch is like a good old Southern meat and three lunch restaurant, and then you go back for dinner, and it's this really fancy white tablecloth, you know, high-end dining. And that's a testament to how great the chefs are at Restaurant Tyler. They can cook all that in the manner of food in such a great, great way. Go eat a great meal. It's at Restaurant Tyler. Priority One Bank, 16 locations to serve you throughout Central Mississippi. Let PriorityOneBank.com be your guide. They'll show you not only where they're located, they're going to show you how they're going to help you manage your money, invest, and plan for the future. Now, more than ever, when you have questions about your money, you need answers, you get them at Priority One Bank. Because they know how to take care of you. They've been taking care of you for a long time. And if you live in Central Mississippi, you live near a Priority One Bank location. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. You know, people talk about this podcast like you guys are so negative. And maybe, you know, if we are, we are, right? We just try to report, so on and so forth. But it makes me sad that Mississippi State and LSU are playing this week. And this is, in my opinion, the best baseball rivalry in college baseball. These are the two programs that have been at it the longest in the SEC. To me, there's a bigger rivalry between LSU and Mississippi State in baseball than there is between State and Ole Miss in baseball. Maybe that's just me, but that's just how I feel. So I wish I had more enthusiasm. That being said, I have not been enthusiastic for either of the last two series with the Tigers, and State's won them both. They were able to win in Baton Rouge when LSU was on route to a national title. You know, they lost the game at Skeens pitch, but they won the other two. And then last year, Mississippi State, in reality, could have swept that series, but got the win. Run ruled the Tigers in the series finale on Saturday.
Robbie, what is it? It was a base running blunder that hurt them Saturday.
That's correct. So, just for you, what are your memories? What are your feelings about this rivalry between these two schools?
Yeah, I think it's certainly a huge rivalry between them. And I know State really struggled to win this series in Duty Noble. for, you know, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But the strange thing about it is State has had some success in Baton Rouge. They won the series in 16. They won in 21. They won in 23. So they've had some success there in Baton Rouge, and they did get the series last year as well at home. So State has actually been pretty successful against LSU, mm-hmm. you know, over the last few years. But it's a program where both fan bases are just rabid about the sport. And I give Skip Bertman and Ron Polk a lot of the credit for taking baseball, college baseball, and bringing it into the modern age. It was not a super popular sport. Still is not a super popular sport, but these two kind of changed how you viewed college baseball.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in great players that were exciting to watch, that were fun to watch and for, you know, the media to cover. They kind of made the baseball game itself more of a spectacle than just a game. They added some marketing things to it. They built the bigger stadiums. The atmospheres at LSU and Mississippi State were really second to none for many years. And if you look back on it, neither of these two programs were really super successful until the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And for LSU, it was kind of the 1990s when they really exploded. Mississippi State kind of started it in the mid-80s. LSU had some good teams then as well. And it's kind of interesting, both of these two guys kind of came up together and they evolved baseball into, you know, something that it is today. I mean, a lot of what we see today in college baseball is thanks to Skip Bertman and Ron Polk. And I think that's really resonated through these fan bases over the last several decades. And these two programs have really been the model of consistency. Now, LSU's had way more highs than Mississippi State. They've won all the national championships. They've been to more College World Series. They've won more SEC championships. But I think the fan bases are very similar in their love for the game and, you know, how they support, how they invest in college baseball. And it's created some great ball games over the years. And we set through that 6-hour game in Hoover, whatever it was, a few years ago. We've set through some good games in, you know, the regular season as well. I went to the Super Regional and watched that Mississippi State team take on a LSU team that went to the national championship. It's just been a really competitive rivalry for the most part, maybe not in terms of wins and losses for Mississippi State all the time, but look at the players that have come out from both programs going to the MLB, done big things. It's been really competitive over the years.
We should be in for a treat in this Thursday night opening game with these two pitchers, with Pico Khan for Mississippi State and Kate Anderson for LSU.
They do pitch on Thursday.
Do what now?
If they do pitch on Thursday.
If they do pitch on Thursday. And I know Lamona said that he would look into that when we talked to him on Monday on Sports Talk Mississippi. I think they're going to go head-to-head.
I would think so.
And even if they don't, I think they would move them both back to Friday. So maybe that's what we just get on Friday. I think we're going to get that pitching matchup, though, of Anderson versus Khan. The numbers are great. This is Kate Anderson on the year. He's 5-0 in 6 appearances with 1 shutout, 34 innings pitched. He's only given up 25 hits. Teams are only hitting .205 against him. His whip is .97. His ERA is 2.65. 56 strikeouts to 8 walks. Then you have Pico, 4-0 on the season, 6 starts, 35 2/3 innings pitched. He's only given up 18 hits. Teams are hitting .148 against him. His whip is .70, 53 strikeouts to 7 walks. These are two of the best pitchers in the SEC. I am hopeful that we will get this matchup to lead us off on Thursday. This is the thing that, you know, if you ask me about Mississippi State baseball and can they win series, what gives me hope that they can win some series is I think with the way Pico is pitching, every Friday night they have a chance to win. And that's what a Friday night ace is about, right? It's about having a guy that you can put out there and you know he's going to get you 6-7 strong innings and put you in a position to win the game. They have that with Pico. I mean, they won last – it's crazy when you look at last weekend's games, right? They scored 11 runs. They scored 3 runs and had an opportunity to score a lot more in the Sunday game. But the game they won, they only had 2 runs because Pico was just so good in that one. That's why he was our ace Bolton Screw ace of the week on Sports Talk Mississippi. This should be a high-level pitching matchup. LSU's got pitching, good pitching all weekend long. This is State's best opportunity to get at least 1 win here.
Yeah, it's going to be – a challenge too. This is a really tough lineup to get through, especially at the top with Jair Jones and, you know, Monster in the middle infield has been outstanding defensively, but also has some pop in that bat. This is kind of when you want to face LSU in Alex Box because of the way the wind shifts and the air there and how things change whenever it starts warming up. It's never a great time to play them there, but this is usually the time, and especially if you have that wind blowing in. I remember in 2021, Christian McLeod, who was a fly ball pitcher, we talked about whether or not that wind was going to shift a certain way, and it was blowing in that weekend. And if I remember correctly, McLeod got a ton of fly ball outs that just kind of died there. That's what you'd probably hope for in this one as well. And for Mississippi State, defensively, you got to be really good in this series, and especially in that first game, if it is Pico versus Cade Anderson. Cade is a guy that he gets a lot of swing and miss at the top of the zone, but he also is not going to – he's not going to make you chase a whole lot either outside. He's going to stay in the zone, but it's tough to hit. Mm-hmm. His mid-90s fastball from the left side, really competitive with the zone. He's not going to give up a lot of free bases. I think he has 8 walks on the year. And honestly, that's Pico too. I mean, Pico and Cade are both guys that if they get a 3-2 count, you better be prepared to continue to kind of hack away and stay in the fight because they're not going to lose the hitter a whole lot. So we're going to see some really competitive pitchers in whatever game that is. If they both pitch against each other, which I imagine they will, you're going to see some really competitive left-handers, two guys that I think are going to go relatively high in the draft, and they're going to give their team the best chance to win. It's up to everybody else from Mississippi State to break through. Offensively, when you do get that opportunity with a couple runners in scoring position or something, you better bring them in. You can't lose those chances in this kind of ball game because LSU will make you pay. And when you get guys on base for LSU, State's got to get out of those innings from a pitching standpoint and defensively. They were not able to do that against Oklahoma. They got to do that against LSU. This is a much different lineup at LSU than it was against Oklahoma. That was a lineup that was going to play a lot of small ball.
Yeah.
They're going to steal a lot of bases. This LSU lineup that can mash, that can hit 1-9. Not a lot of holes in it, and obviously you got one of the best hitters in the game right now as well in there. So it's going to be really difficult, but State's got to play their best series. I think this is the toughest matchup of the first 3 weekends, I think.
Oh, no question. No question about it. Even though, I mean, and we're saying that even though Texas just took 2 out of 3 from LSU
right.
Last weekend. LSU at LSU, we just know what kind of animal that is. State's won the last 2 series down there, surprisingly enough. They obviously won the series in 21 en route to the national championship. And then, well, as I mentioned, took it last year. So State's actually won 3 of the last 4 series against LSU. That's not a stat.
They've won, let's see, what would it be, 3 out of the last 4 at Alex Box too, right?
Did they win in 16?
They won in 16.
Yeah.
They lost in 18.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have one in 20. And then they went there in 21, yeah.
Yeah, this late one.
Key for State.
You would never guess that.
Yeah, it's really crazy. I think the key for State is they have to go in loose.
Like, yeah.
That place will eat you up if you let it. And State has a lot of young pitchers that are talented, but they've never experienced anything like this. Oklahoma was a country club atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
especially compared to what you're about to have.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they really need to play loose in this, try not to be uptight. I think that was one thing that was really going for them in 2023 is they had absolutely nothing to lose at that point. They weren't making the SEC tournament. They weren't making postseason at all.
Mm-hmm.
LSU was playing uptight because they were working for, you know, a number one seed and the SEC championship and all that. And, I mean, honestly, I think you could say that State had a lot to do with LSU making that final run there that season.
Mm-hmm.
But State had nothing to lose going into there, and I think that's what you have to have this time around as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. It feels kind of early in the season to be saying you got a free shot at some of these teams. But right now, Mississippi State's reeling a little bit. They need to play loose. They need to play with that kind of attitude to have a chance to go in there. If they go in there uptight and they're balling strike counting, That's not going to be good for Mississippi State. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think State can get this first game if Pico pitches. I think they can. They'll win one. Is winning one enough to come back and then try and get some sort of reset to your season starting next week, or do they have to find a way to win this series to have? I've gone past saying they can host. I'm at the point where I'm saying, can they make the postseason?
I mean, I think they can still make the postseason if they win. If they don't win the series, you're obviously putting yourself behind the eight ball there.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to win a game. I don't think you can come out of this with one win in your first three weekends. It's going to be really tough. And then, like I said, I think they might have done that. I can't remember what they did in 18. Was it 2-7 or 1-8?
In 18, they were 2-7 at the end. And LSU coincidentally was the third series.
Yeah. So, and I think LSU started off poorly last year, kind of like that.
It did. Yeah.
It's not over by any means, but it's just digging yourself further in a hole. And that's kind of the issue is you will be sitting there at 1-8. Or whatever happens this weekend, and that's just not a position you want to be in with the rest of the schedule coming up. And some of these teams that we looked at preseason and said State should win the series or State should sweep the series, they look a lot better than we thought. So it's not going to be easy by any means in the back half of the schedule either. But State just needs to really play well and see where the cards fall here this weekend.
Think that you think they can get a second game?
They can. It really depends. If they can take the game against Kate Anderson, they have an excellent chance of winning that series. Because first and foremost, the guys behind Anderson have been good, but they haven't been great. They're good enough that they can roll through Mississippi State's lineup, or they've shown the ability to give up some runs, and State can have some success against them. Their bullpen has a couple of really, really good pieces. And then after that, it can get a little shaky. So it really just depends on what they can do in that first game against Anderson. If you can somehow get him out of the ball game in the fourth or fifth inning, have some success against him, work his pitch count, similar to what they did against Arkansas last year and Hagan Smith, I think that you give yourself a really good opportunity to set yourself up on the weekend. But a lot of things need to go right for Mississippi State to have a lot of success.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see what happens Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So first game tonight against the Tigers, 7 p.m. first pitch. That is televised on SEC Network, 6:30 p.m. first pitch on Friday, and then on Saturday at 2 p.m. First pitch for the series finale. Let's stay on the diamond here for just a minute, but another diamond. Let's go to my interview that I did earlier this week. I got the chance to talk to Coach Samantha Ricketts. Her team is off to an incredible start. 27-6 on the season, 5-1 in conference play. That's the best record in SEC play to start through two series that the school's ever had. It's the second best start of all time at Mississippi State after 30 games. So huge series coming up this weekend with the Texas Longhorns, the number one team in the nation, and it's also All for Alex weekend. So it should be a very emotional weekend. I talked to Coach Ricketts about that. Let's go down to my talk with Coach Samantha Ricketts, Mississippi State softball. Mississippi State softball is off to a great start, a school record start in the SEC, and one game off the pace for the best start in 30 games. What happened, Coach? We can't get one more win. What's the deal, Coach Ricketts?
Yeah, we don't like to do things the easy way. We're always going to make them a little bit more difficult on us. That's just what we do.
Coach Samantha Ricketts joins us here on the podcast right now. And, Coach, like I said, your team's off to a fantastic start. What surprised you about this team thus far in the season?
I think how quickly it kind of all came together. I think you see it in preseason and in the fall that we had a lot of tools and a lot of pieces in place to have a good year. And it's just really kind of how quickly is the team going to mesh and gel and kind of get rolling together. And I think it really was game one, weekend one, and they just came out ready to play. And I just think how quickly it all kind of happened for us is probably what surprised me the most.
And you played a really good Texas team. Game one, weekend one, a Texas Tech team, I should say. And a game that, against a ranked opponent, and you didn't really, we didn't know exactly what your team was going to be. Leaving that game, did you walk off the field going, wait, we might have something here that maybe we didn't expect?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with that was just the mentality. You know, we knew that we had the talent to compete, but there was just no fear and the competitiveness and the fire to get after it. And it was the entire lineup, the entire dugout, the ones that were on the field and not. And I think that was where it was really kind of a little bit of a moment of, okay, like we might be able to roll with this here. And then we lost game two, but we learned from that.
So I don't know, you know, as much about softball as you, obviously. I don't really know a whole lot about it, but I have to think if you get a hit one out of every two times you come to the plate, you must be a pretty good player. So tell me about Sierra Sacco and what makes her such a consistent hitter.
Yeah, Sierra Sacco is one of the best hitters in the country, and she has just had having a great year. It just continues to get better. And I think a big thing for her, just outside of the sheer amount of hard work and extra work she puts in, it's just her mentality. And it's just really kind of a professional approach, is how I see it, where it takes a lot of probably your average hitters are going to make adjustments from game to game. You know, I think really good hitters will adjust even at bat to at bat, but the best of the best, like Sierra, can go pitch to pitch, and she can know after how they're setting her up with early in the count, where she's how she's going to be pitched late in the count and make those at bat adjustments. So it's been really cool just to see her mindset and how she's worked and how she continues to kind of lead into the team with a lot of that as well.
When you have a player like that that's hitting at that level, as a coach, are you tempted to maybe not coach as much and say, look, what she's doing working is working. Let me let her play her game.
I mean, I think for a player like her, she wants to be coached. She wants to be pushed, and she wants to go into coaching. So I think that's where it's been a huge part of it as well. Like she's always asking questions, and you know, she wants to know the why, and really a lot of times just for her own knowledge, for that she knows she's going to take with her into the coaching field. But no, I mean she's one that's going to push her teammates. She's going to ask for more, and you know, she's okay if you can get on her at practice. And you know, she wants to be the best, and she's not satisfied. And she gets mad if she loses a practice drill or she gets out in a practice scrimmage, whatever it is. She's going to be just as upset as she is in a game.
When you look at your stats on the roster here, you've got five hitters with six or more home runs. You know, we talk about in baseball all the time that it's become this like it's home runs or strikeouts in baseball. Is that happening in softball as well? Is power a big focus when you go into recruiting, or is it still just about making, you know, moving the runners and being able to have those high batting averages?
I think we've seen a shift the last few years into more power, just with the, I think the involvement of not only the bats, but just the athletes are better. They're bigger, faster, stronger, you know, and our ballparks aren't getting any bigger. The fences are still 200 feet down the lines. And that's, I think you're becoming an easier thing for a lot of players to reach just with the sheer amount of technology and training that we have available at our level. And now you can get players who maybe aren't the biggest on the field, but because of the just sheer athleticism, the quick twitch, you know, tools that they're able to have, you can have someone like Kylie Edwards who's going to steal a bunch of bases and hit the ball over the fence. And just that's kind of more our focus in recruiting. It's just the overall athleticism and players that can do a little bit of all of it.
When you sign great players out of the transfer portal, you know, you set a level of expectation. You're like, they're going to come in, that we need them to contribute immediately. With a player like Raelynn Chafin, has she exceeded what you thought you were going to get with her coming into Mississippi State? Has she been better than you thought she was going to be?
I mean, I think she's exactly what we thought we were going to get from her. And I don't think really anybody else thought that, just looking maybe at her numbers and with her being kind of a 1 year transfer. But with us, you know, we're big with numbers, we're big on the data and development, but a huge piece of it has to be the mentality and the relationship. And that was the number one thing that stood out to Raelynn, to us this summer about her. And her first phone call with Coach T, our pitching coach. She walked into my office and said, "That's the transfer pitcher I want." She said she gets it. Her mindset is exactly what we need. And I think the two of them are just so in line with the way they think and the way they compete that it really was just a perfect fit for us and for her.
What's a non-negotiable in your program?
I think just that level of competitiveness and the intensity and it just being able to bring it every single day. Practice. We want practice to be harder than games, and we want them to compete just like they do on the weekends on a Tuesday afternoon.
This weekend coming up. So it's All for Alex weekend. So that's obviously a very emotional weekend here at Mississippi State. It's the number one team in the country coming to play your team. Oh, it just happens to be Texas. And where did you go to college?
Oklahoma.
So, you know, I know coaches are going to be like, well, it's just another game. I know better. I know better. There's a little extra juice for there. Could we have crammed any more emotion into one weekend for you than we have this weekend coming up?
I'm not sure. I think, you know, every weekend's big in this conference. This one obviously extra special. And, you know, it's why we played OU the last four seasons just to be ready for this moment of facing the number one team in the country. You know, if we want to take our program to that level and be at the best, we got to play them. And so we willingly went out of conference to play Oklahoma the last 4 years, also the four straight years that they won the national championship. And so now facing Texas, the current number one, you know, feels very similar. And the point of that was so that our team goes in just not afraid and knowing we can compete with them. We've had a lot of good games against OU over the years, and I think that's the goal this weekend against Texas is to play Mississippi State softball. And in a big weekend as well, you know, baseball's on the road, so we're hoping that brings in a lot of fans for us and we can get really good crowds in here. And then on Saturday, when the entire SEC wears teal in honor of Alex Wilcox, and to continue to share not just her story, but just the message of ovarian cancer awareness so that we can help prevent that disease in one more young woman. And it's just, it's a lot. It means a lot to us. And I think, you know, not to be too cliche, but that's what the SEC is, right? Every weekend means a little bit more for us. And I think this weekend just can be another one of those.
If you take this series, what are the odds I'm going to get a horns down out of you?
I better ask, you know, maybe Zach Zelman or my administrator if I'm even allowed to do that one. But my players probably will.
I bet Tyler Bratton does it. I'll put the money on that one.
There's no controlling him. There's...
No, absolutely not. You know, long way to go, obviously. But when Neuse Park was built, you know, the hope was that would be a place where Range Duels would be hosted at some time. So I'll ask the question this way. If your team continues to play the way they've played these first 33 games, will Neuse Park host softball in the NCAA tournament?
If we can continue to do what we're doing and win throughout conference play, I think, you know, we definitely are in the mix to host a regional. And that has been the goal all along. Obviously, you have to take care of the non-conference games as well. And some of those, you know, they can end up hurting you at the end. So we need to make sure that we kind of make up for a couple of those early losses with what we do in SEC play. But for us, you know, I think we ran into it a little bit last year, looking a little bit too much ahead. And we have to be one game at a time, one weekend at a time, and making sure that if that's our end goal, we take care of business, you know, on the Wednesday afternoon in Hattiesburg against Southern Miss before we start looking ahead to Texas, to Tennessee, Missouri, and Oklahoma, who we have coming up next.
Been a real fun team to watch thus far, and I'm looking forward to seeing how much further they can go. Coach Samantha Ricketts, Mississippi State softball, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
I was thinking about something, Robbie. You know, Mississippi State softball Super Bulldog weekend plays Ole Miss, and then you've got, I believe, Kentucky is the baseball series. If baseball doesn't pick things up, you could see like softball becoming the event that weekend, where it's like that's because Ole Miss is ranked. They've improved a lot. There's just a possibility that more people are interested in what happens on the softball diamond that week. That could be a week to see who ends up maybe hosting a regional.
Especially if they're able to get out of this weekend, have some success.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I get swept.
Right now, you're looking at you just had two top 25 series wins to start SEC play against Alabama schools. You'd never beaten Alabama in a series at Alabama and had a really good weekend against Auburn. You come out of this weekend and you're sitting there at 7-2 in SEC play, and you're starting to work towards national seed status at that point. Yeah. And this team has never hosted a regional.
Correct.
They host the Super as a 2 seed coming out of that regional in Tallahassee. They've never hosted an actual regional. That would be historic. And Samantha Ricketts has already done so many historical things in Mississippi State. She's already working towards setting up a resume of being state's best. And that would be huge for this program. That'd be a huge step forward after last year, starting the season tickets, I think, for the first time in school history. They are trying to build a lot of momentum around that program, and they've done a really good job so far. This would be huge this weekend if they can find a way to get 3 here or 2 here and win the series against number one Texas, or just get one of them. Just get one and stay kind of ahead of the curve a little bit. You don't want to kind of fall back after winning those first two series. Can you just find a game this weekend, and then anything else is gravy?
Yeah, it's just about not getting swept against this team. And then when you go to Oklahoma in a few weeks, you know, play these are the top two teams in the country. And then the rest of it, yeah, if you just play the way you've been playing, you're going to be just fine. Maybe not as a top 8, but definitely could end up as one of the top 16 and hosting a regional here at Neuse Park for the first ever time. So good stuff. Man, she makes me work hard, though. Ricketts, she makes me work hard. I had a 7-question interview. That should give me about 10, 11 minutes. It's usually maybe sometimes 12, 13 minutes. That was 8 minutes. Woman talks fast.
He's a fast talker.
I like it, though.
She gets right to the point.
Don't mess around. Yeah.
All out, and she's good.
Always fun to talk to her, though, so always a good time. All right, let's move into the last part of the show. We got an SEC football preview, and that's going to be the Kentucky Wildcats. That's brought to you by our friends over at Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District, the place to find smoked Southern soul food. And, of course, our friends at the Older Brother, the home of the fancy sandwich. We love a fancy sandwich here on Thunder and Lightning. I love the Cook Monsieur. Robbie likes the Older Brother burger. We both like the fries. I like it when he orders the burger because it comes with fries, and I can just snatch a few off his plate, and he's powerless to stop me. That's right. I said it.
I've dropped some on your plate after you tried to grab it. I did stop you from grabbing the
fries.
Well,
no, I stopped myself. I just said, you know what? It's not worth, you know, embarrassing him here.
Pulling the Bob Carscadden.
No, if I was Bob, I would just wait till you left and then go back in.
He'll put his grimy fingers on your plate, too.
Yes, all nine of them. If you want to eat a great meal, it's really easy to do in Starkville. You just got to go to the Cotton District, and you got choices. You got Two Brothers Smoked Meats and the Older Brother right there, two of our favorite places. Great products, great service. Every business likes to promise it to you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems. They've been doing it for 50 years.
50, brother.
When you need technology for your business, give Advantage Business Systems a call. And then if you need service, it's the same people you get to talk to. They know you. They have that relationship with you. They've taken care of you in the past. They'll take care of you again. 601-362-9192 or visit them online, absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. Next time you're in Starkville, you're going to head into a Mississippi State game. Before you go, you need to go to Maroon & Co. Before you head to Davis Wade, to Diddy Noble, or the Hump, a trip to Maroon & Co. is a must. Starkville's biggest and best selection of Mississippi State merchandise. They've got the stuff that you're looking for, all of the new logos, all of the name brands. And best of all, they have a promo code that's going to save you a little money. If you want to save some cash on your next purchase, use our code THUNDER15 to save 15% off regular price items. Some exclusions do apply. Next time you're headed to the game, you need to be wearing maroon and white. You need to go to Maroon & Co. All right, back on it with the spring football previews. Today it's the Kentucky Wildcats, a team that, you know, as I mentioned to John Hale from the Lexington Herald Leader, normally that's a team we would talk to a couple times a year because we'd be doing opponent previews, but not the case so much anymore. Interesting thoughts from him on Mark Stoops and where he thinks that program's headed. Let's go down to my interview with Lexington Herald Leader beat writer. Glad to be talking about Kentucky again on this podcast. Didn't have it last year for the first time in forever with Mississippi State and the Wildcats not matching up in the regular season. John Hale, our old friend from the Lexington Herald Leader, joins us. Glad to have him back with us here on the podcast. And you know, interesting spring at Kentucky. You know, a team that a couple years ago, you know, they win nine games, and you think, okay, this is a program they're off and running. They're about to, you know, maybe make another step forward, and it's just been kind of a slide back for them the past few years. They've missed in the transfer portal on some quarterbacks. It just hasn't been the kind of consistent winning that Mark Stoops was doing there for a little while. What's the mood at Kentucky coming into this spring?
Frustrated, for sure. I mean, I think there were plenty of fans who were ready to move on and start something different after last season. That was never realistic. I mean, they went 4-8. They lost their 8-year bowl streak, but he's still the all-time winningest coach in program history. You don't fire that guy, regardless of what his contract situation is after one losing season. But you add in the fact that he makes $9 million a year. He signed for 6 or 7 more years. The buyout would have been the second largest in college football history behind only Jimbo Fisher. Like, that's never a realistic possibility. That being said, now you're in a spot where you're bringing back a guy who some fans are disappointed with, who's obviously disappointed in their own performance, who clearly wanted out a year ago when he tried to get the Texas A&M job. And it's not a great spot right now. They're in a weird dynamic for the fans. Mark Stoops came out on the first day of spring football and basically said, don't ask me about specific players. I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to hype anybody up, which is bad for us. But I do have some sympathy because it's kind of a reflection of the reality that nothing he says between now and September is going to change anybody's mind. Either you're still on board, you're still optimistic, or you think it's over with. They just got to go out and win games this fall to prove that he still has it and that he can still win here. And until they do that, there's going to be a lot of people unhappy.
Why is Zach Calzada going to be what Devin Leary and Brock Vandegrift were not?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, honestly, at this point, after watching what happened last year, they would take what Devin Leary gave them in a heartbeat. I mean, he was a guy who still got drafted and ended up in an NBA on a practice squad or an NFL practice squad for most of last season. So he was not great by any means. He made lots of mistakes down the stretch, but he was way better than what they had last year, and I think that reflected in it. I think the best hope for Zach Calzada, and I tell this probably means more to Kentucky fans locally, is for him to turn out to be a guy like Steven Johnson, who was their quarterback in this beginning of this uptick with Mark Stoops. He was a quarterback in 2016, 2017. He was not the most gifted guy. He was never going to be an NFL quarterback, but he was really gritty. He could make plays with his legs. He had a decent arm. Like, that's kind of what Calzada does. The numbers he put up at Incarnate Word, like, those aren't realistic. The competition is going to be much better, but also the system's just very different. But if he could do what he did at Texas A&M as a freshman, like throw for 2,600 yards and 18 touchdowns and 10 interceptions, they would take that in a heartbeat next year, assuming that they have a competent rushing attack to go with it and a better offensive line. The big X factor, though, is they still have Cutter Bowley on the roster, who's the now going to be a redshirt freshman quarterback who they think is the quarterback of the future, who showed some real glimpses down the stretch, who's definitely probably more talented quarterback than Zach Calzada. It's Zach's job for now, but Mark Stoops is so desperate to get this turned around that if Cutter Bowley has a huge offseason and comes out in August in camp and looks like the better guy, they'll just play him because they have to do that. So I think you go into it assuming that Calzada is the guy, but leave open the door that the young guy might make strides to take it over.
When I think about Kentucky under Stoops, I always think about the running game. He's always had a quality back there. Dante Dowdle is a name that's very familiar to us here in the state of Mississippi, a Picayune kid. State recruited him hard out of high school, recruited him hard in the transfer portal. He ends up at Kentucky. Is he going to be a guy who can play that Chris Rodriguez role from a few years ago?
Yeah, that's what they recruited Chip Traynham from the transfer from Ohio State to do last year. That's what they hoped he was going to do. And then he was hurt for basically the entire season. And by the time he came back late in the year, he had kind of gotten passed and they had other guys. So I think Dowdle, they hope that that's his role, that he can do that. He's certainly more proven in Nebraska than even Traynham was at Ohio State and Arizona State before that. That's a good thing. But their big play home run guy still at running back is going to be Jamarion Wilcox, who's another Deep South recruit who showed a lot of promise as a redshirt freshman last year, but had some issues like learning the playbook, doing some of the little things that you need to do. Like multiple times last season, he ran out of his shoes because they weren't tied correctly and had to come off the field after a big run. So like that's kind of a symptom of the program as a whole right now. So between those two guys, I think there's real hope to have a competent rushing attack, but it's clear they needed that guy who can come out when everybody in the stadium knows you're going to run and still get 2 yards. They didn't have it last year, and the hope is that Dowell is that guy now.
The transfer portal really has a lot of effect on this Kentucky offensive line. When you look at them, that is a lot of new faces at positions where you'd like to have older faces. What do you think about this line? Can they be good enough in this season?
Yeah, it's going to be the X factor for the whole year, I think. I mean, they were terrible in 2022. The offensive line was maybe the worst in the country. They got better in 2023, but then still went and fired their offensive line coach at the end of the year when Eric Wolford, who was their former O-line coach, who was at Alabama, became available after Saban returned. So you bring Wolford back hoping, okay, this is what's going to really get back to the big blue wall, as they call it in Kentucky. And they took a step back last year. There's just no other way to do it. Some of that's transfer portal misses. Some of it's younger guys not getting developed. They're really at a spot where they're still feeling the effects of those two or three recruiting classes as John Schlarman, their beloved longtime coach, got ill before he died. Like, they missed some stuff in that cycle that's hurting them now. But you go out and get probably 4 starters from the portal. So even one of your returning guys has probably gotten recruited over at this point. Most of them are coming from smaller schools, though. They look the part. They're mature. They're physical, all of those things. But there's a real question, like, how does Shiaz Pete, their new left tackle, how do you make the leap from New Mexico State to the SEC? They did get Joshua Braun at guard from Arkansas, so he's got experience. But their right tackle, Alex Wolfschlager, is coming from Bowling Green. They got another – their center's coming from Western Kentucky. So, like, those guys have some things to prove at this level. The hope is that if Wolford's as good an offensive line coach as they've hyped him up to be, that he made the evaluations to do it. Luckily, all of those guys are on campus this spring, so they've got some time to build some continuity. But, you know, until we see them do it, it's a real question.
It's the same story on the other side of the ball in the defensive line. I can't remember a Kentucky team that had this little experience coming back in the trenches, but it looks like you're going to have maybe 3-4 new starters there as well. Maquise Humphrey-Grace is a guy Mississippi State recruited really heavily out of the portal, desperately wanted to get him to Starkville as a pass rusher. Is this going to be a Kentucky defensive line that you can trust in SEC play?
Yeah, I mean, they do at least have some backup guys who are part of the rotation coming back, who I think factor in it. So a guy like Josiah Hayes, who is a nose guard, he might not start, but he's going to play equal snaps there. He was hurt for most of last year, then came back last, and a Mississippi guy who, you know, they're going to count on. Khalil Saunders, another defensive lineman coming back, who's played a lot, not been the guy. Like, those guys will be in the rotation, but you're right. The transfers are going to have to carry the load. Humphrey Grace is probably the biggest name there. Being a Cincinnati guy, they had some connections there that helped them get that over the line. But they need David Gusta, the transfer from Washington, who's going to play nose, to be a difference maker. Like, he's a guy who has that kind of NFL potential, but he's got to go out and prove it. They got another transfer, Jaden Williams from Wyoming. So another guy from a small school who's going to have to prove it at this level. The edge rusher is going to be completely new. I mean, J.J. Weaver had been here for like 6 years. Now he's gone. You got to find a new edge rusher. So they got Cam Olds from Kent State, Sam Green from USC, a guy who barely played at USC last year. So those questions, again, like, they've got in their secondary, they've got a lot of guys coming back who played last year, but that front seven could be almost completely overhauled versus what it was for the first half of the year.
I feel like we're asking a lot of questions about Kentucky. What do we know about Kentucky? What do we know about this team coming into spring?
Yeah, not a lot. That's really it. Because even I mentioned, like, secondary is a spot where they have so much experience back, but those guys didn't play up to their standard last year. It's not like what they wanted them to perform, so they need to take a step forward. Special teams, you lose your kicker who was all SEC last year. You've got a decent punter coming back. But on offense, they can have 9 new starters. And on defense, it could be 6 or 7. And so, like, we don't really know a lot about this team. I think that they're going to have a decent run game between Wilcox and Dowdle, but, like, I don't know that for sure. I think their inside linebackers are going to be okay because they got 2 guys in Alex Safari and Davern Rayner who were on the team last year in supporting roles, ready to step into a new role. But I don't know that until they go out and prove it. And they're, neither of them are the biggest guys, so they got to worry about getting hurt in this league. So, the you know, that's a long way of saying I don't know that we know a lot at all. Like, I don't think there's any givens with this team at this point.
As a guy who covers Mississippi State, I'm not trying to overlook Toledo because I know what happened in that situation last year. But for Kentucky, Ole Miss coming in week 2, we're going to learn about this team awfully quick. That's an Ole Miss team that's going to come to Lexington. You know they're going to want some revenge for what happened down in Oxford last year. What are we going to learn about this team that early in the season? They also play South Carolina before we get into October. They have 2 massive games in the first month of the season.
Yeah, it feels like a real tipping point in terms of that conversation we were having about the fan base and their faith in Mark Stoops, because, like, they're going to want them to go out and prove it. And because the way the schedule sets up, you could be 1-4 at one point, 1-2-3, and people will have been totally checked out by that point, even if, you know, the schedule has some winnable games down the stretch. So we're going to learn a lot. I mean, they're going to have to – you're right, they can't overlook Toledo. That's a good team that, you know, could absolutely come in and beat Kentucky if they play like they did last season. And so, like, that's going to be a difficult one. But maybe it's good in some ways that you will be tested week 1, because then you know a little more than you would have otherwise going into those SEC games. It's not going to be a situation where you just beat some FCS team by 45 and didn't really learn anything about your team. So, like, it starts right away, which is why the urgency is there right now. They know they can't waste days in December, January, or March, because it's going to happen early for that team.
We've talked a lot about transfers. Are there any freshmen coming in that we should keep an eye on for Kentucky?
Yeah, that's interesting, but it does feel like Kentucky went in knowing that this is kind of a must-win year. They went all in on the portal. They do have a decent high school class that's ranked up there. They have a couple receivers who are probably going to play some. DJ Miller, a 4-star kid from the St. Louis area, he'll probably play a little bit. On defense, Martellus Carter is a local kid, a safety from Western Kentucky. He's definitely going to play. But it's going to be complementary roles. I don't think they have a freshman on this team that they're going to expect to start from day one like they did with, you know, Barry Brown and Dane Key a few years ago. Like, it's going to be the portal who has to carry most of that weight.
All right, we're wrapping this up with the same question we're asking everybody who does these interviews. Today is March 25th as we're sitting here. When I come back to you after Kentucky-Louisville, what am I saying about this Kentucky team?
Right now, I mean, not knowing more, I think we're talking about whether there's coaching change. Like, I think it's hard to see a path for them getting to 6 wins at the moment before we just know whether these transfers have panned out. And, you know, I'm leaving that door open. I think it's certainly possible that they could be that good. But with so many questions, I just can't pick it right now. And if they're not in a bowl game after that Louisville game, that's going to be the conversation. I personally don't think you still can fire him because the buyout's going to be that big. But he has been so open about the frustrations and the toll that the NIL and the portal and all that is, there seems to be some people who think like maybe he'd just walk away or maybe he'd negotiate a smaller buyout. That's the conversation we're going to be having after that Louisville game if they're not in the bowl.
What's the buyout if they fire him at the end of the season?
It's like $36 million, something like that. It's still a lot. Like it's too much to fire your winningest coach of all time. But also in this environment, like with everything coming to college football, you can't afford to not be good at football. And so they're going to have to figure that out.
It's going to be an interesting season up there in the bluegrass. John Hale, Lexington Herald leader, man, always appreciate you. I guess I'll see you maybe next year. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Thanks for having me.
As you can see, I hit the button a little early there before it went. John Hale was in that interview. I was so excited. Anyway, he thinks this might be it for Stoops, Robbie. He thinks that.
Ooh.
I mean, he said it's a big buyout, but they have to be better this year. They have to get to a bowl game at least.
Wow. A fall that would be, man. He's going to be the A&M coach.
I think that's what's driving this, though, Robbie. I think that fans were like happy with Stoops. They were like, look, he's doing as good a job as you can do up here at Kentucky. There's a reason Andy Staples called Kentucky the best job in college football, because if you win 8 games a year, they'll treat you like a king.
Yeah.
But then he puts his foot in the pool over there, and everybody's like, oh, wait, we've been this loyal to you, and you can't, you know? I mean,
and that was probably one of the only teams that would be willing to spend that kind of money on him, because he hasn't really done anything major there. He's just been better than what they've always been, and he was getting paid a lot of money to keep him there. He was essentially, you know, their Dan Mullen.
Yes.
Now I think Kentucky fans are like Mississippi State fans were with Mullen. Whenever it was apparent he was looking at other jobs, State fans were kind of just like, you know what, we're tired of this. I think a lot of them are willing to accept him back now, but they just got tired of it.
Yeah.
You know, you're not really producing well enough and you're looking for other jobs.
Makes you wonder what happens if they replace Stoops and the next guy comes in and he's 3-9, 3-9. Like, well, maybe you should have just toughed it out there with Stoops.
That's probably what's going to happen.
But I mean, this is a team that's relying on Zach Calzada, who we've seen before not really be able to be great in college football here in the SEC. They don't have a ton of playmakers. They lose Barry and Brown to the transfer portal. He's at LSU now. And when you look at their depth chart, it is incredible. I don't know. They are replacing, like, of their starting 22, I think like 16 of them are new faces.
Yeah.
That is not a recipe for success.
They've had a lot of turnover. They always have like that. I don't know how they continue to get good wide receivers, like electric wide receivers. They do almost nothing with them. And then the quarterback situation. Every single year we hear about a new quarterback they bring in from the portal that's going to be really good.
Yeah.
And none of them have been really good.
Right.
Will Levis, I guess you could say, is the best one they've had. And we constantly talked about, you know, what we weren't seeing in him. Mm-hmm. And that's being backed up in the NFL. Everybody talks about this guy's got the best tools. He's going to be a great pro, and he's not really doing anything in the NFL. And we've seen Zach Calzada in the SEC.
Yeah.
So there's no reason for me to just jump on board with that.
You give me that. You give me
offense too.
You give me what I believe will be a below average quarterback with 4 new starters on the offensive line and 4 new starters on the defensive line. You're going to have trouble convincing me that's a bowl team. I'll just put it that way. So
yeah.
All right. Tomorrow, back, we'll be doing a lot of LSU talk tomorrow, because tomorrow's preview is the LSU Tigers with our friend Wilson Alexander from The Advocate. He'll join us tomorrow. All right, guys. Have a great Thursday. Robbie and I will be back tomorrow with a recap of Mississippi State LSU's game 1, that spring preview, plus anything else that happens between now and then. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Mississippi Media Production.